You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and I'm with two dear friends, Adam Mutasov and Greg Gibson. Hey, guys.
Hey, Clint.
Greg, hey, you're Clint. Supposed to say hi. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have you. Okay, so we're going to talk about raising pastors from within today. But before, let me tell you about how awesome these guys are. Adam grew up in a Muslim family and is converted to Christianity as a teenager. Since believing the gospel, he has had a consistent vision for church planting. Adam planted Redemption City Church in the city of Baltimore. And Adam and his wife, Sherry, have three sons. And Greg serves as an elder over at Foothills Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. He oversees, he used to oversee the multi-site strategy on staff there, but now he's working primarily with SALT Movement. It's church planting work in Eastern Europe. He's the executive director of SALT right now. And he has started several investment companies and other businesses with the goals of creating passive income streams so he can do ministry better and support ministry better. Greg and his wife, Grace, have two children. Welcome, both of you.
Excellent.
Thanks,
Ben. Well, so we're going to talk about this subject of raising pastors from within. And let me just acknowledge, everybody's trying to do this, and it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, when I talk to church planters about this, they say things like, I sent this guy or I raised this guy up. And I don't know, it's my experience that when I say I sent a guy, I don't feel exactly honest about it all the time, because I feel like when I say I sent a guy, it's like, well, did I send that guy or did he decide to go? And what were the factors contributed to that? There are a lot of things involved. And I'm just saying, like, pastors often like to make it sound simple, like it's something they do real easily. Like, you know, they hardly think about it. I just sent a guy, I raised a guy up. But that is some of the toughest work we do, in my experience.
Oh, yeah. Like, everyone's planted a church in Guatemala or India.
Yeah.
That's all, man, all these churches, these people planted. Yeah. Really, you gave a couple grand. You know, it's a little different than raising up leaders internally.
Yeah, or even gave a couple grand. I mean, I find sometimes it's like we prayed for them one time.
You know? Yeah, we planted a church by praying for them.
Yeah, yeah. And hey, prayer does things. I don't mean to put that down. I'm just saying that we're better communicators than we are actually developers.
I agree.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, I think this episode's a little bit about just calling a spade and acknowledging, yeah, we're not that good at this. And if we're going to be good, if we were really good at this, there'd be a lot of church planters, right? I mean, there'd be just church planters everywhere. If all the pastors and church planters that, you know, talk about this were really that good at it, we'd just have church planters coming out of the woodwork, but we don't. I do feel like we're in a unique season where churches are trying to develop residencies and they're working on internships and apprenticeships and they're bringing on and raising up young leaders. They're attempting to do that work where 10 years ago, people weren't attempting to do that work. I think they were just kind of expecting church planters to come in from various places. So I'm encouraged, but I also think we're a long way away and some humility would really be kind of helpful in the conversation from my point of view.
100%. Even like the mega churches with all the resources in the world, they're struggling to raise up leaders. So it's not just like the guy with 10 people in his living room starting a church. It's like the big boys too, struggling with this.
So Greg, let's start with you. You've kind of been on both sides of the aisle, so to speak. You were a church planter. You tried to raise up leaders from within your church plant. You also have worked on the staff of mega church, and you worked with me at a mega church, and we worked together trying to do church planting work there. What are the unique challenges, advantages, and disadvantages of those two?
Yeah, I think when you're church planting, you're doing everything, you know. So I think when you're the guy trying to get your church plant off the ground 1, 2, 3 years, you're just kind of in survival mode. So you have a lot of plates that you're spinning, right? Not to mention thinking also about, you know, what's next? How are we going to multiply this thing? I think the advantages are is that there's less people, right? So you can already kind of see who's engaged, who's faithful, who's deaconing, right? Without the title, eldering without the title. And then who kind of has these more apostolic gift sets. And it's definitely more observable, I think, in a smaller context. Yeah. Now, if you pivot over to a larger context, like you said, we serve together at a mega church in the DMV area. And now I'm currently at a mega church serving as an elder. And it's really still the same concepts. But what I found is you have to have a clear process because there's so many more fish right in that pond where guys are doing different things, and you have to be even more intentional to say, okay, we're not just going to grab people to serve in the parking lot or to do, you know, this ministry or that ministry, but we really have to kind of raise the bar on leadership development. So the intentionality is there in both. And I think there's different advantages and hardships in both contexts. But if you had to ask me, I would rather raise up leaders in smaller contexts, but I'd rather have the resources of a mega church to do it.
You're the best of both worlds. Well, I've often thought about, you know, our church planting journey at the church I planted, and I think the fact that I didn't have any notoriety and I didn't have anybody that wanted to join my residency or wanted to be trained by me was actually a huge gift that I was given in the beginning. Because I was forced, the only people I could get to pay attention to me at all or to want to be discipled or trained or prepared for ministry leadership were those in my own congregation. And so as I was looking out over my congregation, I got this small group of people and it's like, this is what I got. And I'm not going to be able to, you know, attract anybody else in from the outside. I don't have budget to attract them. I don't have notoriety to attract them. It's just, these are the people that God's given me. And then, you know, what am I going to do with what I have? And so I, in the early days, really figured out how to take somebody where they were, no matter where they were, and try to help them see a vision for using their lives to spread the gospel, and then helping equip them to do that and kind of trying the inspiration piece all the way to development preparation. And so that was a skill I learned in a small church environment that I don't think I could have learned if I'd had a bunch of resources like I did later on in ministry. So I don't know if you guys, you know, feel the same way, but that's absolutely, I see that as an advantage now when I look back on that situation. So Adam, let's talk about how you go about identifying potential church planters and candidates from within your congregation.
Sure. I mean, I typically look for someone who's just walking closely with Jesus. It's pretty clear. They have the characters of 1 Timothy 3, and they're just fun to be around and clearly walk with Jesus. And if they have those categories, I mean, I got from Tony Marita, and I'm actually assessing a guy on this today, but there are four main categories we look for. We look for philosophical unity, how we do church, theological unity, what we believe about the Bible, competency, they can get the job done, and chemistry. Because there are certain guys that just I'm not going to work well with, and they're not going to work well with me, and that's okay. They work well with someone else. So if they fit in those four categories, typically I will go to them and be like, hey, bro, you're phenomenal. I see pastoral gifting in you. You should go down this process that we have to develop pastors. Become a member, then join a gospel community, then lead a gospel community, then do RCC Institute. Then when you've done all that, get assessed, then get a custom prep plan, then do a residency, and then boom, you're good to go. Good to go. I think the big part of the problem, I think two things that I noticed when it comes to leadership development in church planters, in churches in general, they don't have a plan, and not having a plan is planning to fail. Imagine if you had a guy named Pagan Pete who would say yes to everything you ask them to do. Do you have a clear plan to get him from pagan to planter? There should be step-by-step process that you have already mapped out that you put people to. Yeah. And then time allocation. Like, are you investing hours of your day into the primary strategy of Jesus? Jesus did not rent out the Roman Colosseum and start a service. He had dinner with 12 guys for 3 years. So who are you having dinner with? Who are you developing? And do you have a plan?
That was so nicely alliterated. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Adam, I love that. I use plumber to planter, but I like
that's
I like
good pagan. Too. Yeah.
Pagan.
Yeah. 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 And I agree, man. I think naturally in the church, what I've seen, and I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on this, but I think more apostolic guys, right? This little A gifting to plant churches or to even start ministries or to do things outside of the church don't naturally find their kind of assimilation into like the normal church, right? The normal church structure, the normal church process. And a lot of structure in the church is just kind of bringing people into what we've already created. So guys like us might not just assimilate into, you know, leading a small group or, you know, doing this thing or whatever it might be, you know, that we have. And I love that you're kind of already above the weeds, you know, kind of seeing these things like, man, does this guy love Jesus? 1 Timothy 3 qualifications. And then let's create a process for him outside of maybe even the normal. Here's how we assimilate people into the life of our church.
Yeah. I've worked with both of you guys a little bit, and you both sort of have system minds. You know, you're imagining from the beginning something that's going to work not just for one or two people that you have a personal relationship with, but you're trying to create kind of a system or a pipeline or strategy where members can move through the process. So I don't know that the average pastor is thinking in terms of systems quite in the same way that you guys maybe more intuitively do. Well, talk about maybe Adam at Redemption. You said if you fail to plan, you plan to fail, and I get that. But maybe where you might start if you're a pastor who doesn't have any system or development plan, where you might encourage them to start.
Yeah, I would just get a few of the most promising, committed members of your church plant or just church, and get them together in a living room and discuss some of the most influential books in your life. For me, it was like Biblical Foundations for Baptist Churches by John Hammett, which is just a beast of a title. I mean, I can't believe that's not flying off the shelves right now. It's like New York Times bestseller, Biblical Foundations for Baptist Churches. But I'm telling you, that book tells you what a church is, what elders do, what deacons do. It just sparks some incredible conversation. And then I would say, all right, you five, write a paper about what elders do. Or here's the scenario that our church is facing right now. About membership, church discipline, or whatever, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And honestly, meeting every other Monday for 2 hours, talking about the chapters we read in that book, discussing papers, it created incredible buy-in. And all those people, almost all of them, are serving in ministry in some capacity right now, mm-hmm. either full-time or just they're bivocational or have another job but are committed to the church. It's really about time investment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talked about at Redemption about identifying leaders, but Greg, for you, when, you know, let's put aside 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, 1 Peter 5, kind of those biblical qualifications we're looking for in pastoral work altogether. Let's just talk about some of those, some of the things that you notice when you're interacting with somebody that puts your spidey sense up to say, hey, this person has the kind of quality that I'd like to invest in, or maybe not even quality. They have some kind of potential wound up in them that I want to invest in. What are some of those things that you see?
Yeah. I mean, for me, regardless if it's planting a church or serving in a mega church environment, my stab at leadership development is pretty much the same, right? I think like you guys, I'm still trying to figure it out, but what I've done that has been successful is I do kind of a small group where I call it pastors and planters, mm-hmm. and I invite 7 guys a year into this. And I did it in DC, and I've done it twice in my context. I'm at in Tennessee now, and I take them through kind of what Adam's doing, right? Of like, hey, you're a potential pastor, you're a potential planter. Here's what I see in you. And that first checkbox, Clint, is like, for me, it's like, do I like this guy? Mm-hmm. Do I like being around him? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of that culture piece. Does he fit? Is he convictional? Kind of a winsome guy? But then I'm also kind of noticing, man, is he more pastoral shepherd kind of guy? Or is he right. more gatherer, evangelistic, apostolic kind of guy, right? And that's why I call it pastor planter, because I bring both those types of gift sets into this group. And what I want to see is, like, are they gathering people? Are they acting like a church planter without even knowing what a church planter is?
Yeah.
Right. Are they telling me stories about being evangelistic? Are they telling me stories sharing the gospel? Mm-hmm. Are they like thinking about their neighbor, you know, and in any kind of context at all? That's kind of my, you know, if someone says, hey, I'm being intentional this way, like, spidey senses are up. And I'm like, okay, let's lean into this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Sometimes you remind me of, like, sometimes when I'm having that conversation with somebody for the first time, I'll say something like, I don't know if you've noticed, but not every Christian in our church shares the gospel with their neighbors like you do and brings them to church. Like, there's, you know, there's 100 dudes in our church and you're the only one who does that out of the 100, you know? And I don't know if you've noticed, but not every man in our church is asking me about how to help their wife grow in her faith. You know, like, that's a thing that you're doing that other people aren't doing. So that's a special grace that you've been given in some sense by the Lord, a special pastoral heart you have. You're taking on the spiritual burdens of others and trying to help people grow spiritually. That's what pastors do. I wonder if you've noticed that about yourself. I've noticed it in you, kind of thing.
That's so good. Yeah. It's those who are pressing in. Right. Mm-hmm. And they could be pressing in like totally different buckets. Mm-hmm. They could be pressing in relationally, evangelistically, discipleship wise. But I want to be, like, intuitive, mm-hmm. right. And sensitive to those moments where men really are pressing in. Mm-hmm. And I want to invite them to press in even further and say, okay, let's think about these next steps. So I love what you said. I don't know if you've noticed this, but no one's doing this. You are doing this. Let's explore that a little bit more.
Yeah. Adam, you were going to say something?
I was going to ask you, I mean, Clint, you've developed and sent so many guys. What have you noticed at the beginning stages of guys that turned out to be, like, leadership studs, mm-hmm. that they embodied at the beginning?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the first impulse I have to answer that question is to say that, like, I mean, in some ways, the idea of a leadership stud is unhelpful, I think, because the road to pastoral leadership is a really crooked, messy one. Like, it's not, yeah, say what?
It's kind of an oxymoron.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're always like, yeah, I want that. Sometimes in the organization I'm involved in, we use the phrase five-star planter. And I'm always thinking, like, what is a five-star planter? Does that just mean they plant a church that a lot of people go to? Or, you know, I mean, because my church has developed people who came into our congregation as truck drivers or Marines or whatever. And then, you know, 2 years later, 3 years later, they're pastoring a church, and they're not that good at it when they start. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm not that good at it. I've been doing it 20 years. I'm not that good at it either. So it's like, I try to not think about it. My impulse is always to go to that place where I'm like, I want the excellent, excellent person. But I think, you know, in a sense, I want to lower my standards a little bit and go, look, I want people that have high moral character. I want people that love Jesus and are willing to be faith-filled and make sacrifices for him. But maybe they're not the most eloquent or whatever. There's a space for that person who's a 10-talent guy or a 5-star guy who gets it all done right. But I also think pastoral ministry should be studded with, you know, all kinds of people who are, you know, not given that full set of talents. And so sometimes, I guess, to answer your question, I'm looking for signs, like Greg was saying, signs that they have a pastoral impulse and they're doing pastoral type things naturally without being prodded to do that. And then I want to put down some crumbs in front of them to see if they respond. You know, the crumbs would be opportunity for discipleship and development. So if I say, hey, I'd like to spend some time with you to help you grow in your faith and maybe sharpen your pastoral skills, and I'd like to give you some opportunities to do some pastoral things around the church, would you be interested in that? And the man who says, yes, I'd be very interested in that, that's the person that I want to walk with and spend time with.
And they actually do what you tell them, like, read this book, and they read the book, or yeah. Do this task and they do the task.
Yeah, I think there's a subtle difference between teachability and agreeability. And that subtle difference is really important. Mm. You know, teachability is a great thing. We want people to be teachable, but teaching, you know, it kind of carries the idea that I receive it and I act upon it, where agreeability is like, you look like you receive it, but in actuality, you don't receive it. You just keep doing things the way you were doing them. But you can't tell if you're the trainer, you can't tell the difference until they do something, you know, but in the conversation, it feels exactly the same. Like that person's totally with me. Then you walk away and they're like, they didn't do anything, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's a lot of people I interact with. They end up in the long run being agreeable, but not really teachable.
Clint, I've heard you tell a story before where you take guys to coffee and you, I mean, kind of open the door immediately, kind of in exactly the framework that we're talking about here. Hey, I've noticed these things in you.
Yeah.
These are things that make a good church planter.
Yeah.
Are you interested in being developed to be a church planter?
Yeah.
And do you still do that?
Oh, yeah. The joke around our church is that, you know, I've done it with everybody. And so it's like he's asked all of us out, so we're not special. You know?
All out.
I mean, but I haven't. There are certain people that I definitely have not done that with. But I do it. I do have those conversations much more liberally than the average pastor, for sure. But the conversation that you're referencing usually goes something along these lines. It starts with a text always. I love starting it with a text because you get to frame a meeting in a text by what you say. So I usually say something like, hey, I got something really important I want to talk to you about. Would you mind meeting with me on Thursday, you know, at this place at this time? I want to talk to you about it face to face. So I just did two things in that text to indicate this is not your average conversation. We're not going to get together and talk about sports and shoot the breeze. This is real. You know, this is serious. So usually they say something in response like, sure, should I prepare for something? You know, they want to know, like, they're trying to get an indication from me what we're going to talk about. And I usually say, like, I'll tell you everything when we get there. Just hold on, you know, because I want to, in a sense, it's a little shrewd maybe, but I want to build like a sense of like, I want to have an important conversation with you that's important to me. It's a big deal to me. And then when we sit down, I just say, like, right off the bat, hey, the reason I asked you to come here today is because I think you can be a pastor and I'd like to help develop you to become a pastor. And I want to talk to you about if you've ever considered that, you know, yourself. Or I would say something more direct, like, I brought you here today because I want to plant a church in X location. And I think you're the person to plant that church. And I know you got a career and a job and a family and all kinds of reasons why you can't do it. But I also know that you're a Christian. You love Jesus and you always obey him if he calls you to do something. So I wanted to get together with you and talk about what he might be calling you to do.
That is super compelling. I'm like, sign me up. That's really good.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those things you've been doing it for a long time. And our main goal has been to multiply churches, not to grow big as a church. So
that's right.
Every person in our church is a potential church planning core team member, a church, you know, the joke is to Clint's the church planning hammer. Everybody's a nail. But that's, I mean, I kind of feel like that's the way, you know, pastors are supposed to be. Our job is to equip the saints for the work of the ministry and send them out to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. One thing I remember hearing you say, Clint, is everyone who's a member of Pillar Church, at one point we want them asking the question, is God calling me to plant a church?
Yeah, sure.
And that's something I 100%
tell you. Yeah,
or be on a church planning team. And it's 100% something we've brought to RCC of like, everyone's in the game. No one's on the bench. We're all being developed to our next step. Just what is our next step?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think we're at a situation in the church right now where, you know, we have more professional pastors and more better, well-trained pastors than probably any time in human history, especially American history. You know, we have all these professional pastors, yet we're kind of at a worse place, spiritually speaking and church-wise, than we've ever been. So, I mean, what we know for sure is that the professionalization of our pastors doesn't equate to the church advance. So if that's true, then the converse might be true, that if we deprofessionalize pastoral ministry a little bit, then we might make a little bit more progress. And so that's kind of the premise of which I'm working. And I want to be a pastor that starts a lot of churches and sends a lot of people out to start churches. And so that means I can't only do it with professionals. I have to do it with the average everyday Joes.
Yeah. And Clint, I've learned so much from you about just intentionality. like watching you be intentional, even thinking through how to send a text message to somebody to take them to the next step, getting them in the coffee shop. And then what does the next step of the conversation actually look like? Right. All kind of under this umbrella of intentionality. And I have taken so much of that and applied it to my life, you know, in leadership and ministry, just like watching you and the stories that you tell and the fruit that you've experienced as a trainer and developer. So the intentionality of that is, man, that's what I want to be about. I know Adam wants to be about that. Seeing movement in that direction. Like you said, like we have the largest churches in America, but America is like the least spiritual like it's ever been. So there might be a disconnect of something that's happening with actual discipleship and actual training, actual gospel movement, you know, advancement taking place. But I want to be in the lane of everything that you're talking about, intentional steps and development, right, in church planters and hopefully – you know, God using us to see multiple churches planted in our lifetime.
Yeah. You're so encouraging, Greg. I think when I'm depressed, I'm just going to call you to talk to me. That sounds encouraging.
Well, I mean it.
Yeah.
You're three people I've learned from the most and you're right there. It's like my mom, you, and you know,
Jesus,
like, Jesus.
Put Jesus in the mix there.
The Office episode where he's like, my heroes are God, Martin Luther King. And I can't remember the other one.
Oh, man. Okay. Greg and Adam, thanks so much for being part of this with me today.
Thank you, Clint.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.
I'm Trevin Wax, and I have a new podcast called Reconstructing Faith. In it, we address the church's credibility crisis, reflecting on the challenges of today while learning from church history and the church around the world. Look for it wherever you get your podcasts.